Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5. We invite you to tune in to more great music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station right here in Laguna Beach, California. No matter where you are in the world, you can listen to our station at kx93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. Right now, here is Awakening Code Radio from KX93.5.
Thanks for joining us here on Awakening Code Radio. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the Emerald Tablets that I have heard about a little bit through supposedly coming from Lemuria, Atlantis, into Egypt with our guest, Deborah Shea. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome, Deborah Shea.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, and we've got everything working now, which is always awesome. Our podcast recorder is doing what it's supposed to be doing. So let's just do a super quick update of the Emerald Tablets in Legacy. I'll try and do a quick catch-up. Is that supposedly there is this Egyptian deity, but existed pre-Egypt. Now, we've seen what he looks like in Egyptian murals. He had a human body, but he had a head of a big bird, a big hook-faced bird that's called an ibis. And this is Thoth or Thoth. And supposedly he existed in either possibly physical form for many thousands of years through Atlantis, I mean through Lemuria first, through Atlantis and into Egypt, and actually may have had or written on these physical tablets that could have looked like green glass or something. But information that served humanity deep, like almost like accessing the everything. Sometimes we call that the Akashic Records. And then, Michelle, what was your question that you wanted to start off with?
Well, I'm fascinated with what you're going to share with us about the Emerald Tablets. But because of where we live in a very, you know, affluent area, and because of the subject matter, I'm just curious how you got started and what your story is on the beginning path and how people relate to what you share with them. And you know, I see you as this beautiful inside and out. You're just radiant. And I'm sure that when people meet you, they're expecting one thing, you know, and bam, you probably give them another if you're not afraid to, you openly share this stuff. So will you tell us a little bit about how this all came to be for you, your personal journey with it?
Sure. Well, you know, when I was very small, I loved nature and I grew up in Denver, Colorado. So I got the opportunity to go to the mountains a lot with my father. And I was always picking up rocks, but, you know, not necessarily your most beautiful rocks. But I liked to talk to the rocks, and I believed that they could communicate with me, just as most little kids can. Later on, we're told by our parents that that's just our imagination, and so it shuts it down adequately. I had kind of a traumatic childhood. We lived kind of in a rough area, and, you know, all of that stuff shut down, as it does in most people. I became a very successful business partner to my husband. We had very large companies. Around the tech crash that happened, we lost everything. We ended up moving out here to California, and it was very hard. Many people, you know, had a hard time around then. What it did to me, I was 29 at the time, is I had what some people would call a psychotic break. But what it really was a rapid awakening.
Like a psychotic breakthrough.
Breakthrough, mm-hmm. Yes. And what I know now is it was, like I love your radio station's name, Awakening Code, because that's what it was. It was an awakening code within me that brought back, like, all of that natural connection. As if out of nowhere, you know, I all of a sudden could hear spirit again. I could talk to nature. I could even, you know, hear deceased spirits or angels and that type of thing. And my husband said, please, whatever you do, do not tell anybody any of this because they're going to think that you're crazy. And I said, well, I know, but I just feel like there's nothing more important than this right now.
And how was he with it? Just he himself?
He's still a successful entrepreneur. And, you know, he's fascinated that I can make a full-time career out of it. So he loves it from the business aspect, and he completely respects and supports me. But he still stays in the what I call the normie world. So, you know, I'm able to balance those sides. But it didn't shut down my passion for it. I went on to, you know, get a bachelor's, what the equivalent of a bachelor's degree in healing science, Barbara Brennan Method Healing. I studied crystals. I rekindled my love of rocks. As a matter of fact, I became so obsessed. I had to have one of each kind of crystal.
I'm so glad my husband's hearing this program right now.
At that time, there was one special crystal that really, really, really blew my mind, and that was the Lemurian crystals. They're a kind of quartz that comes from Brazil, a very special part of Brazil in São Paulo.
And you make jewelry with them as well,
I do. I craft my own jewelry. I make all sorts of crystal wands and crowns, and, you know, I'm very artsy in that way as well, in big, huge ceremonial crystal grids. But the crystals started talking to me again, and I had to find out everything I knew about these Lemurian crystals. I sat with them and went into very deep meditation and began to have spontaneous memories of Lemuria, which was advanced civilization that was said to have existed in the Pacific Ocean. I then became aware of why I wanted to live in California so much, because it is the edge of what was Lemuria at the time, and what my deep attraction to Hawaii was, and the ocean, even growing up in Colorado. So I began to channel and receive information from the Lemurian guides and the crystals, which then wanted me to go and teach other people how to access the information that's contained in crystals. And what I really loved about that is it's got so much scientific basis in it as well. It's really grounded. You know, all of our great technology comes from crystalline technology. What we're doing here on this radio show wouldn't be possible without crystals. You know, all of our advanced, even weaponry, our TVs, our cell phones.
Our watches.
It's all crystalline. But we're crystalline. And, you know, that was really, you know, that was really the passion behind it. I started to realize was that we are humans becoming crystalline human. You know, we're carbon becoming a diamond, you know. And so that led me into teaching. You know, I now get to teach in Japan. I'm soon to be going to China, doing, you know, ceremonies around the world. And what happens is the guides will then show me other things that they want me to learn. When I first started teaching in Japan, one of the guides that came in when I was meditating with the crystals and my promoter was Thoth. And he had shown me in Lemuria a lot of the ancient wisdom that was stored within the crystals. He also showed me how we were going to be accessing that so that we could then teach this to the Japanese when I went to Tokyo and Fukuoka and then later Sapporo as well. I'll be back in January, and I continue to, you know, bring through new information for them. But the next wave of that information coming through was that this god, this guide, you know, Thoth, had encouraged me to begin to remember my connection to Egypt and also to Atlantis as well. I do a lot of Akashic Records work and a lot of mining my own Akashic Record to remember what my connections are, because therein lies what I'll be sharing with others.
Can you explain what Akashic Records are?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, because we have to assume that there's people out there that are hearing words they've never heard before. So go ahead and describe
absolutely.
The Akashic Records.
So Akashic Records are, they're records that that we each have our own Akashic Record. The Earth has the Akashic Record. They're held outside of the physical dimension. And we can access them, you know, through either meditation or through crystals or through other methods. But basically, it's the record of all that is, all that was, all that ever will be. So if we're accessing our own Akashic Record, we can access any past lives, any past experience. We could even access the Akashic Record of a house that we want to move into and see what the land was before that. See what the house, you see, you know, what has happened with that house. We could even go forward into the Akashic Record of that house and then pull out future potentials. What would that house like? Would it like new trees? You know, what needs to be, you know, a specific walkway or that type of thing. So we can basically, Akashic Records for the Earth, you can go through epochs of time and then visit various pieces of time, either past time, future time, or infinite time. So it's really all of those things. So you can access an Akashic Record for virtually anything with its permission.
And probably the most famous person, at least in America, that accessed the Akashic Records was Edgar Cayce.
Yes.
And who was a very normal guy, kind of a story similar to yours. Very normal guy. I forget what he did as his profession, but he started kind of having these either channeling experiences or trance experiences very late at night or early in the morning. He would lay down very quietly and someone would dictate, or he would be speaking and his assistant would be writing down what he was saying. But he was saying, this is the Akashic Record that I am accessing.
Yes.
Very fascinating.
It's like a history book on steroids because it goes forward too.
And it is in all these multi-dimensions. It's not like we're looking for books. Like supposedly the Emerald Tablets might have been a physical thing at one point. The Akashic Records are just this ethereal. And we'll talk about, we're going to mention Nassim Harriman when we come back because there's a reason to do it. We're going to break for a song, and usually I ramp up a song, but this one just jumps right in and says the word awakening, so I have to do it. But this is Shine by Ecstatic Union. We'll be right back.
Yay.
Yeah. Where we are going is a great awakening. A great awakening of the magic in the human heart.
Sing with me, shine. This is Nassim Haramein. I play with the physics of the universe and bring them to you so you can tell me what you think about them. You're listening to Awakening Code Radio on KX93.5.
Thank you, Nassim Haramein. We're going to talk a little bit about him. We had someone call while the music was playing, Denise, just like, how do I listen? You know, and it's very easy, kx935.com, and there's always a tab that says listen now or listen live, and you just click that, and anywhere you are in the world, it's very easy. There's an app you can download the first time on your phone. If you type in kx935.com, it will say listen now, and it'll give you an option. You can download the app on your iPhone or your Samsung phone, your Android phone. And then the app is always there, and whenever you just touch it, you'll be listening to whatever is playing on the radio at the time. And then all you got to do is just remember when we're broadcasting. It's Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 Pacific time. Very easy. I played Nassim Haramein's intro because some exciting stuff is happening that I just have to talk about.
This is the first time I get to hear about it. And
well, it's very crazy because...
Do you know Nassim, Deborah? You don't?
Okay.
I smiled while you played that because he is so playful like that. Yeah. He's like a surfer dude physicist.
He's like the rebel surfer dude physicist. But he... he's been doing, you know, on the pursuit of sort of like the unified field, which is kind of the holy grail in physics, the thing that connects. And we're going to talk about this. I know with Deborah Shea, we're talking about the Emerald Tablets tonight, but sort of the as above, so below, or as small, so is large. And there's a problem in physics that small physics on the quantum level work just fine. If you're just dealing in very small quanta packets, it works. And if you want to do space physics, there's a whole other set of rules, and it works. But the little physics don't just dovetail neatly into the big physics.
Right.
And Nassim is one of these guys, says, listen, big stuff is made of small stuff. We got to find this unified field theory. The movie about Stephen Hawking, The Theory of Everything, that's the everything they're looking for, is how does the small particle physics communicate to the large, the astrophysics? And so Nassim, he's been on the show in the studio.
It's not the number 42.
With us. It might be 42, might be 432. But anyway, so he's been on this trail for quite a while, and he has a movie coming out, a big budget. He did a big fundraiser about 3 years ago to generate money to make this movie called The Connected Universe. And Patrick Stewart is the narrator of it. I mean, it's a pretty big budget event.
Awesome.
And it is coming out. I had no idea. Well, we'll talk about him first. It's coming out, debuting in L.A. on Monday, the 26th of September, so very soon. On our side of things, you know that I made a movie called Sonic Geometry that talks about this reference between geometric shapes and frequencies and harmonics, and it alludes to many other things. We debuted that movie, that video, with Alana Luna producing it 3 years ago. You were kind of the key that said there's going to be more information after the first video, because after the first one was done, you came back from Contact in the Desert with a video by Michael Tellinger and a bunch of number sequences that we talked about in the first video were here in a completely different context.
And it was all above my head, but I knew Eric needed to see
it. And
I'm
like, oh my gosh. Yeah. So we have been working. We did our own little fundraiser. We're nowhere near the budget that they generated, but God bless us. We've been working very hard. Alana Luna has been slaving over a hot computer for the last year, and ours is actually potentially going to debut tomorrow. The autumnal equinox, that's when it debuted 3 years ago.
I do remember.
So Nassim's project was supposed to debut a year ago. We thought it was possible that our movie might have debuted a year ago, and I had no idea that his movie was called The Connected Universe. All the while, ours has been called Communicating with the Universe. So very many parallels. And here they are both debuting within 5 days of each other. So it's kind of...
exciting.
It's very exciting. Yeah. And I know that we're going to see a lot of cross-pollinating people at the debut of his video, because the same guy, Robert Grant, that was here on the show talking about it, he put Nassim and I together in a research panel. So it's been exciting. I can't even tell you how exciting it is. I'm just going to invite you, listener, go to sonicgeometry.com, watch the first video, and be ready for the second video, Sonic Geometry 2, Communicating with the Universe. I am super stoked. Alana has watched it now a billion times, and seeing it finished, she says she cries every time at the end. She says it's so full of hope for humanity and where we're going and what this really all means.
That all ties into what you're talking about, Deborah.
Certainly does.
You're giving us... you're giving us the connected universe with your experiences with these tablets that hold this information and with the Akashic records that go backwards and forwards, right? And it connects everything.
It really is all of this.
What a perfect storm we're having right now.
No, it really is all of that, that this information, and that's what I wanted to reference with Nassim Harriman. I know he's going to make this point in the movie, is that space is an information field. And as energy moves through it, like every person, everything, every rock has its own little energy field. We call it a tube torus, but it spins mm-hmm. like a donut. If you've ever seen Earth's magnetosphere, that would be a good example of that, like an aura field. That he believes that every time it passes out of the center of it and arcs around and comes back to the bottom, it's picking up information out in that informational field. So I heard a quote from his trailer of the movie that says, matter isn't defining space. Space may be defining matter, meaning the information is out there as energy just moves. It's getting its information of how to be a human, how to be a dog, how to be a tree, how to be a planet. That information is out there, and it's just as energy moves through it, it picks up the information it's supposed to pick up from its very starting point, its seed point, its zero point, and becomes the rock, the dinosaur, the you, the me. So it definitely is all connected to the same information.
And it's so exciting. And as he was describing that, Deborah, I was seeing you standing in the middle and all this information coming to you, because that's what we were talking about before the break, was how you got into this and what happened with those crystal swords. I don't know if it was during the break that we were talking about the alchemy conference when you got these crystal swords, but can we pick up there?
Yes.
Because I think that's what she's going to bring through too, and bring it all into matter again.
And I love that you brought up the torus, because it is really true. And actually all tori are connected. So if you're at the zero point of one, you're at the zero point of all. You're at the creation point. You are one with the universe and one with God. So you do have access to all universal information.
That's and everybody like. Has that ability, correct?
Everybody has that ability.
And well, a lot of people think it's a special thing and that only one person gets entitled to
it. That's the illusion of it. If all is one, if we are all inhabiting this informational field, and the way the toroidal thing works, at least in the modeling that I've been doing and going to show in our second video, it's like we have our own starting point, but as the energy moves, it touches the starting points of others. It's not like they're all at the same starting point. It's just all the starting point. What might be a finishing point to our little field is the starting point to the others. That's the way sacred geometry kind of looks, that it keeps making those flowers where the end of a petal is the center of another flower. So that's the connection.
And we are the embodiment of the flower of life, right? We are the flower of life in form.
Yes.
It feels like.
Yes, and absolutely.
Well, I don't think there's any accident that flower of life has been with humanity for thousands of years. Colleen maybe can post a picture of the flower of life if people aren't familiar with it. You said something before our show started tonight. You know, we've been on this path for a while now. So when we even say things like the flower of life, it sounds like, God, how many billions of times have we said the flower of life in sacred geometry? And there are people that, like, I have no idea what you're talking about with the flower of life. Or, oh, yeah, I've seen that maybe on a tattoo somewhere or something. But really, no idea. But this shape, this six, it's hexagonal, this six-petaled flower has been featured, shown, etched in stone, carved in stone, drawn, painted all over the world in different sacred sites, sacred temples, as it really means something. Japan, the Foo Dogs are got their paws resting on this ball with the sacred geometry. It's everywhere, as if it's like an imprint, like something that we've seen with our mind's eye or maybe our pineal gland or our third eye. We've seen it somehow. When people go on plant medicine trips, ayahuasca or DMT trips or something like that, they will see this eye shape sort of thing. And that eye shape ends up being critical to the formation of the flower of life.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really interesting, you know, that we're talking about the flower of life and also the emerald tablets, because access to the emerald tablet codes, which I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit more about.
Of course.
For all of those that aren't familiar, is one of the accesses of the codes is it fully awakens you and fully activates, you know, all of the sacred geometries within our human form. And the epitome of that human form is our awakened light body, which is surrounded by a flower of life sphere. And so it's beautiful, you know, how all of these topics are, you know, interweaving perfectly.
And they really do, more so on my particular path. You know, Michelle knows that I'm kicking and screaming my way into all this new agey stuff, even though I'm the host of this show.
I know. You should have seen his face when we started.
I'm very pragmatic. I would call myself not cynical, but I don't just fall into something because somebody said it's true. You know, that's kind of a trap for a lot of people. But there is something about sacred geometry that reveals, if you follow it the way we ended up following it in multiple dimensions, it reveals this geometric form called the vector equilibrium that Buckminster Fuller, one of the greatest minds of the 20th century, in straight line form, he didn't ever say the word sacred geometry. He never drew the flower of life. But this form that the flower of life will make in multiple dimensions is the vector equilibrium. He said, this is the geometry of God.
Yes.
Because it is the only geometric form that has a center point where all of the little arms reaching out are the same length. They aren't that in any other geometric shape. They're always shorter or longer, whether you're inside a tetrahedron or a cube or anything. In the vector equilibrium, there's 12 arms. They all emanate out from a center point, the same angle away from each other, 60 degrees, and the same exact length. So you could draw a sphere around them. But if you connect them all and keep connecting them all and keep them curved, you will eventually see how it also draws sacred geometry. So here's a mathematician, an engineer, a Princeton scholar, a Yale, I forget where he went, Harvard, where he went to college, and very admired in academic circles. He, in his own language, said, this is the geometry of creation. And here, if you dissect it or manipulate it a little bit, you find the flower of life and people saying, this is the geometry of creation. Mm-hmm. So we're really talking about spirit and science merging much more right now than in other moments of our history.
Absolutely.
And it's exciting.
It is very exciting.
I mean, come on.
Can you tell Eric's excited about it? I can't.
Well, he's excited to know that he's not freaking out now that we can actually make some connection here.
Yes.
That we're not going to, you know, go way, way, way out.
Oh, I don't care. I mean, we have, trust us, we've had, in 4 years' time on the radio show, we have had everybody. You know, we've had cat channelers and, you know, people. Well, yes. I didn't mock our cat channelers. I said, if the information that comes through is good information, who am I to judge how that good information came through?
I'm glad you justified or made sense of that, because
I have become much more open and tolerant.
Yes.
To all the different pathways. And that's our problem. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been religion's problem, is like, hey, I figured it out, or our group figured it out, your group did not. So quit saying you did. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, well, not only is that disrespectful, and then they take it to the next level of, and we don't even want you on this planet.
Yeah.
And we don't acknowledge that the Jews said that. In the Old Testament, it's actually very clear. Moses, right after he got the Ten Commandments, if you read further into Deuteronomy and Leviticus and Numbers, it's go kill the infidels. So that's in our Judeo-Christian. It's also in the Muslim, you know, it's like, we're the chosen ones. This planet would be better if it was just us. But that isn't compassionate living. That's not what's going to get us further, a thousand, 10,000, a million years down the path of thinking we've got it figured out and we're chosen and the rest of the humanity doesn't. That's not going to get us there.
Yeah, well, you can see, you know, with all the things that are going on, you know, consciousness is evolving, and we would hope that compassion is, you know, being more of the norm rather than, you know, and, you know, you can see all over our politics, you know, with the presidential race, you know, just how important it is. And, you know, the two sides, the polarity sides of, you know, are we going to be selective? Are we going to go back into duality, or are we going to be inclusive? Are we going to bring the compassion back? And, you know, so I would absolutely agree with you in that respect. So I know that you embrace all of the spiritual topics, so I'm half teasing with you.
Yes.
Because you're just like my husband, you know, but far more open-minded,
well,
I have to say.
Open-mindedness, it's been a path. I do believe, as we talk about on this show, there are many benefits to keeping the blinders open. A lot of times when we call someone's living a blessed, great, grace-filled life. How come all these things happen to them? These great connections made, they just snap their fingers and this thing falls out of the sky. And I always remind people, all those things and all those people are circling around in your field as well. You just can't see them because you chose to narrow your vision. And we reinforce that, especially here in America. We idolize narrow thinking. It's what makes an Olympic athlete or a great businessman, someone who focuses so hard and their eye is so on the prize, they're an overachiever, and we value that. We hold these people in high esteem. But at the same time, that narrow vision, that tunnel vision, to become great at one thing means you just did not get to see all these other things that are circulating around in your field. And that's the way I just became looking at it for myself, was this stuff is circulating out there. And it's my challenge to keep my vision open and allow those things to come through and then run them through my logical mind. Some things will stick more than others, but I'm not going to just mock because they don't fit my tunnel vision view of how the world should work.
And what would Toth say about activating what I would call keys and codes that are stored within our cells or within our Akashic or whatever? What would Toth say to our audience or to Eric or to anyone about, you know, how we activate that? Because you and I were talking about that early on before we got on the air. I'd like to hear.
Yeah, so I'm also a skeptic. I love science. So I love the fact that I get to experience things so deeply. I mean, that is my process. And I believe that that's one of my gifts in the way that I bring information through when I'm connecting with Toth or Toth. And, you know, the other guides is I'm given these experiences. And what they urge me to do is to share these experiences because when we get together in groups, you know, our fields are resonating. And it's much easier to access experience than, you know, when we're trying to do it on our own. So, you know, Toth has given me, you know, specific techniques, you know, to help people to, you know, access all of this information. But, you know, I do like what you said, Eric. It's really about intention. You know, we are creators. You know, we are God, goddess, creator. We can be. We're meant to be divine here on Earth. And that's what the Emerald Tablets are about. It's about transforming ourselves into the divine. The Emerald Tablets, through legend, were said to be, you know, the keys to alchemy, changing lead to gold. And like you said, as above, so below. You know, so as in heaven, you know, so on earth. And, you know, they're said to create these universal wisdom codes. And they are in the quantum field. So whether or not they still exist in physical form, you know, buried below the pyramids in some other dimensional space or encoded in our DNA, which is personally what I've been shown and have experienced, we access that with our intention. We access our own awakening, and we can accelerate our awakening through our intention. It's where we're focusing. It's what we choose to, you know, believe or the frequency that we choose to, you know, tap into. So it is. We can have our narrow blinders. We can have our wide blinders. And so, again, you know, these things, even though it sounds very esoteric, it still is, you know, the spiritual meeting the scientific or, you know, the real. And I do love physics, and I like to, you know, study all of the great minds because it matches spirituality and what my experience has been. With our intention, we can, our intention and our focus and our openness, we can ask to receive the highest activation frequencies that we're able to hold at this time. And that's what really, you know, Toth has shown is it's not so much, you know, that people can, you know, remember that they were in Lemuria or the possibility that there was an Atlantis and maybe, you know, that existed, or even ancient Egypt, that these gods or goddesses or, you know, had the ability or the keys to immortality or becoming the divine on earth, but really that your intention and your open-mindedness and your willingness to receive the possibility that this is true creates the field for that transformation. So that's what Toth would say, and that's what Toth has just said.
Thank you, Toth. Well, and it mirrors once again because I'm rereading this book by Buckminster Fuller. He wrote many, but Synergetics is the book that I'm reading because it's the one that addresses most what would be sacred geometry, toroidal fields, the vector equilibrium, all that stuff. And he said, listen, if you're only studying the physical aspect of physics, meaning the stuff that you can, yes, this molecule does this when we apply this pressure, or A plus B does C, you're only halfway there. If you're leaving out the metaphysics of physics, you're not getting the whole picture. And Nassim says that's the same thing. There's scientists who are saying, you have to combine the spiritual, what we would call the metaphysics would be the spiritual aspect, combined with the physical properties of the way we understand things move or heat or freeze or become liquid again. It's, if you're not seeing the all of it, the holistic nature of it, you're not seeing all of it. We're only halfway there.
The indigenous talk about the heart, combining the heart with the mind, right?
Right, so it would be, exactly mm-hmm. the same, combining the heart with the mind. We're at the top of the hour, so we may as well play our top of the hour. Have you noticed that we've replaced big voiced man with a woman now?
I'm so excited.
As the voice
about
that. Of KX93.5. Yes. So we're going to hear from her. We'll be right back.
KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5. This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that any opinion expressed on the air is not reflective of KX93.5, its management, or its board of directors.
Awakening Code Radio is available on podcast. Just go to kx935.com, click All Podcasts, then scroll down to Awakening Code Radio to access our library of previous shows.
Thanks, Kelly Sullivan Walden. She has a voice kind of like yours, just a natural, radio, silky, sultry, motherly, goddessy voice. And she's been on the show a few times and did a little bit of extra work for us, so we appreciate that. Thank you, Kelly. What were you two going on about? You were getting all excited.
When we were off air?
Yeah. I mean, it was like ramped up like a shouting match almost. What was happening? What were you talking about?
There was no shouting match. I just asked Deborah, when Toth comes through, does she get any physical sensations? Because all of a sudden my body got really hot. And I thought, is this a menopause thing? I mean, it could be. Or, you know, like all of a sudden my neck was hot, yes. And I was vibrating and my hands got really hot. I wanted to come touch you and go, yes. Is this normal?
Yeah, he's big energy.
Yeah, you know, huge.
My spine is like it's on fire. Actually, I noticed it, you know, before he actually came in. So he's present because, you know, it's the wisdom that he wants to be re-acknowledged, you know, because many of us carry active codes and, you know, with intentional techniques, you know, we can access, you know, our own transformational wisdom. So you're absolutely right. And I'm so happy that you're having that experience because now I'm not the only one.
Yeah. No, I was
feeling so validating.
I was feeling, you know, the warmth as the same time you were. And I was thinking, oh, you're doing it because it doesn't feel like the air conditioning's on. And it sort of feels like it's gotten cooler in the room since then. Which
All of a sudden, yes. I've cooled down. Yeah.
Yeah. So very interesting. Well, we have awesome because our show runs 2 hours long. And we have the opportunity to actually have real conversations rather than soundbitey conversations, which I'm so grateful for. We had Kelly Sullivan talking about her podcast. We invite you to, we have a huge library of podcasts now, and you can go to kx935.com. It's very easy. They just changed something relatively recent in the last week or two of accessing all of our old shows. So I think you just go to either shows or podcasts, find Awakening Code Radio, and then there's the whole library, or a lot of people find us. I would guess most of our podcast listeners find us on iTunes. And so very easy to find us there. Follow us there. Leave comments there because that generates lots of activity, connects us to other similar themed shows, suggests us to other people that might be looking for a spiritual conversation or an awakening conversation. But people write in all the time that they love listening to our podcast while they're driving, while they're mowing the lawn, while they're walking on the beach, while they're working out. It's a great time. Our conversations are always going to be about raising the vibration, and that vibration means you, your personal vibration. Everything that we talk about starts with you and radiates outward, because in physics, that's the way things work. You don't stand back passively and wait for the world to get great around you before you decide you'll be great with it. You function and be the change you want to see in the world, like
I think it's cute to see what's going on behind the scenes too. And one of the things that just happened is here we have Deborah Shea on our program, and earlier in the broadcast when I mentioned that, well, actually it was probably before the podcast when we were talking about local events, and I mentioned that Shea Freedom was going to be at the Unify Fest and at One Love Festival, and there's a group text that came through on Facebook of somebody saying, and it's somebody's Facebook name is Bambi, says, "Hey Shay, they just gave you a shout out on KX 93.5," and I don't know who that person is, but obviously we are having listeners that do listen live that don't just listen to the podcast. And then Shay responded, so Shay's on his way to Unify right now. But I just thought that was cute that it's your last name,
yes,
his first name, and
your guest when I was at Burning Man,
right? And you're talking about all, you know, everybody listens to our podcast, but obviously people do listen to us live. I am getting text messages. Lori Taylor says she's really glad that this topic's being brought up, and that, you know, now it's opening up. She said, "So glad this topic and info is finally being shared. It will open up a whole new realm for many, and that she's tapped into the Akashic field, and it's here for all who are ready to access it." So
Is happening, and I don't know. It's happened to me on a personal level. You've known me now for 8 years or so, and you've sort of seen what has been happening to me on a personal level. But I see it happening all over, and it almost makes me feel like Earth passes possibly through a band of information. I was just watching an Ancient Aliens show, or it might not even been that. It might have been a more sciencey show than that, of coincidental inventions. You know, something like the car or electricity or something. Two people have no idea, or three people or four, what the other people are up to, and they invent almost the same thing. It's almost like we move through a bandwidth of information, and it feels like we are collectively in a space, whether it's a geophysical space or an ethereal space or Akashic space, but this information is getting easier to access for more people.
And Deborah, would you call that universal wisdom, universal consciousness, where many people get the same message and it's access for everyone? And like we were talking about earlier, that everybody has the ability, because we're all connected, but everybody has the ability,
yes,
to connect.
And, you know, they also speak about morphogenic fields, you know, and so, you know, as we're speaking about the Emerald Tablets and, you know, actively or intentionally accessing, you know, what's going to transform our DNA so that we can transform ourselves, you know, into more light, more compassion, more love, more of our, you know, divine or higher self expressed here, you know, in the world. As we do that, we're becoming more unified. You know, so some people are unconsciously unified, but, you know, still yet, you know, it is all one, really. We're just now consciously becoming more and more of that. So it definitely relates, and I would say yes, absolutely.
What do you think about some of these different portals and dimensions, I guess you would call them? Like, I know that you go to Mount Shasta, and I've been very drawn to Mount Shasta. Have you been to Peru yet?
I have not.
Okay, no. So you were saying, I think at the break, that you were drawn to Hawaii, you were drawn to Japan, mm-hmm. and you were saying that was because?
Yeah, and also Mount Shasta, and then most recently I took a group down to the Yucatan. Drawn to the Yucatan, and mm-hmm. we were doing, you know, sacred ceremony in the cenotes and on the pyramids, and I've had many, you know, interdimensional or multidimensional experiences, you know, where I remembered where, you know, we were pure light or could travel in our light bodies, and as if it was being experienced in the now, which it is. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very drawn to these places because they are natural, you know, vortexes, or they anchor in, you know, higher or beneficial cosmic energies that are coming in, you know, from the galaxy, you know, from the universe, that are being harnessed by the planet. Many of us have noticed an acceleration of our manifestation abilities. Some of us have, you know, even noticed a change in our, you know, our own beings feeling lighter, clearing things, you know, more rapidly. And this is because, you know, the energies coming into the Earth, you know, are accelerated energies. So many of us are drawn to these places, you know, to anchor those energies, because, you know, we really carry them with us then when we come back, you know, into our communities, so we can help to accelerate or ground in that change, or help others to be, you know, to experience some of those transformational frequencies as well. Plus, those areas also carry the holographic information, you know, of Mother Earth, you know, of the energies or the celestial energies or information that's coming in. So sometimes it'll be, you know, remembering, you know, about what we used to do before. You know, more and more people are being drawn to sacred ceremony for these very reasons, because it connects us, you know, back into, you know, being one with each other, being one with the planet, you know, being
and
one.
And calling forth what we want to see on Earth, anchoring heaven on Earth through our intentions. And the indigenous people knew this for thousands of years. They've always done ceremony around the equinoxes and the solstices and the full moons and the new moons, and at these sacred sites with drumming and chanting and keeping everybody in that cohesiveness of oneness. So when you went to the Yucatan, I just came back from the Yucatan last Saturday. I think it was.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, last Saturday.
Yes.
So same thing. I, you know, and I didn't take a group. I was with my family. And, but what I found fascinating was, you know, when more than one person is gathered with the same intention, everything's amplified, right?
Yes, it is.
And when you're in those cenotes, which are natural water, and they're so pristine and clear, and oh, they're so amazing. And these temple sites are really high. So while I was there, the first ceremony I did was at the top of Koba. And you did too?
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Our whole group. Oh, my gosh. I had the most amazing experience.
But my gosh. I climbing those stairs, and you know, what was your amazing experience? Mine probably can't even compare to yours.
That was actually the first one. I actually went with my family the first time, and this was in early 2012. I was already doing sacred ceremony, but went there with my family. And my husband had no interest in going to the ruins with me. But I decided to take, you know, a day trip, because it's not easy to get there from where we were staying. Me and my daughter got there right when they opened, and took the bikes directly to the pyramid. So there was no tourists there at all.
This is at Koba.
Koba. I climbed up Nachmol.
Yes.
All the way up to the top. It's the tallest one in the Yucatan.
Yep, highest pyramid there.
And so I had my crystal skulls out there and my favorite Lemurians, and I was meditating, and spontaneously I just remembered, you know, becoming this big ball of light, you know, traveling in between the pyramids on the ley lines. And I remembered that you could instantly travel to anywhere on the globe, and they were all connected through these ley lines or energy lines.
Yep.
And then I had the remembrance and the awareness that this is why what you are teaching is so important. At the time, I was teaching sacred geometry, the sacred geometry of our light bodies, the platonic solids, you know, that are contained within our light bodies, activation techniques. I was also teaching divine ray wisdom, and they said, this is so others will remember who they are, but in our essential form, which is this light. And it was, I mean, tears were streaming down my face. And then I instantaneously said, I'm going to take a group here. Well, I was very, very eager. And I said, I'm going to do it for 12, 12, 12. Didn't end up being 12, 12, 12. It ended up being 4 years later. Mm-hmm. But I did end up doing a really beautiful ceremony with Isabella Stoloff in Joshua Tree at the Vortexes there for 12, 12, 12, which was magical. But
I was at Machu Picchu then.
Oh,
so we were all connecting on these ley lines and these grids.
Oh, yes. So, and then when I was there with my group recently, again, had this. I was facing the backside of Nachmol that hasn't been excavated, and so as far over as you can get, not the side that's, you know, all exposed, and it's very quiet. And then all of a sudden, I could see the whole jungle transform, and I just remember all these ceremonies that we were doing up there. It was otherworldly,
and they are like that. What happened with me? I sent it to Eric. A heart shaped cloud appeared right after I was done.
All the magical manifestation.
Yeah, it's so perfect.
It is.
We have a good song.
We do.
Out.
The Eye in the Sky. Because you got to talk about the all-seeing eye. Here we go.
Don't This is Shaman Isabella Stoloff, founder of the Orange County Healing Center. You're listening to Awakening Code Radio. Expand your consciousness every Tuesday night, right here at KX93.5 FM.
See, synchronicity right there. You mentioned Isabella while the music was playing, and that's who I had queued up already.
Yeah, he didn't pull that out of a hat. That was already planned.
I just knew in advance.
Love yeah. it. Well, we want to thank all of our listeners, and specifically we want to thank you, Shelley. Shelley Goodfriend texted me and said she is really excited to be listening tonight and wants to hear more about the Emerald Tablets, because we get off track. we get so excited.
We tangent out on this show all the time. So
thank you Shelley,
for the reminder.
Yeah,
Shelley.
Thank you, Shelley, for grounding us back in. And Deborah, we want to pick up where we left off with the Emerald Tablets and the information that they were sharing with you and what wants to be shared tonight, because I know Shelley's really eager to hear about that, and so is everyone else.
Yes, thank you, Shelley. We really appreciate it. We are having such a good time, though. And I'm excited to share the knowledge, because the experiences that I've had, they don't come linear. And if you try to do your research on the Emerald Tablets, you're going to find a lot of divergent or, sometimes confusing or fragmented information about the legends of the Emerald Tablets. So when Toth started coming in after the Lemurian work, or, at the same time of the Lemurian work, and wanted me to start studying Emerald Tablets, I was somewhat confused. You know, what does this mean? I started looking them up online. I started reading. I bought one of the books, which is called Toth the Atlantean. It's an Emerald Tablets translation, which is very encoded, very esoteric. I did read that. If you look and read about Emerald Tablets as it relates to Hermes, you're going to get, he was the father of Hermeticism. That's the as above, so below knowledge and references. And then later on, all the alchemists that were trying to transform lead into gold, you know, they were said to have had access to the Emerald Tablets. But really, what I began to realize was Thoth was talking about our own transformation, and he was talking about this universal wisdom or this access to being God that is contained within these Emerald Tablets. And if you go really far back, the Emerald Tablets were said to have come from the stars and were encoded into very special crystalline tablets that were emerald green in color, but not necessarily emerald. They were of a crystalline substance that is not of this earth. I have subsequently had memories of the Emerald Tablets in Lemuria. You will not find written very much about that topic. However, there is quite a bit of information that you can find about the Emerald Tablets having existed in Atlantis, specifically in Atlantean temples where they had the power of alchemy of the soul or alchemy of the spirit. And again, being able to manifest the divine in a human body, which means that you would have, you would be able to be immortal, which Thoth was, and be able to then transcend your body whenever you chose. So it was the power of being able to embody in an immortal body and basically to be God here, God, Goddess Creator on Earth.
Okay, so if you say that you can kind of access the information mm-hmm. in these Emerald Tablets, it kind of infers that there was written information, almost like reading sentences yes. or words, giving you some actual practical information. What might some of that read like? And rather than I've gotten the overview of alchemy and whether it's a personal or it's more esoteric than that, and divinity and connecting to the all and turning whether it's real lead into gold or if it just means us as like lead and gold is our spiritual existence. I get all that. What might it sound like or read like in a specific format?
Well, it would sound like tones, and it would look like flowing light language coming down, and that's what it appears to for me. The way when I access the Emerald Tablets is just that. It'll be sacred geometry codes, it'll be actual light codes, and it is flowing directly into my body. It's not, in my experience, the Emerald Tablets are not accessed as a read, as you would, you know, a novel or, you know, traditional writing. It's multidimensional writing or access, which has the ability to transform, heal, and activate our DNA. Changing our physical form into divine.
So I'm guessing what I'm narrowing it down to, does it give you a specific thing to do at a specific time?
They're really ascension codes. So what Thoth had shown me is they're light codes and specific universal. It's not information as we would say information is today, because information to us is still very linear.
Right.
We access information linear, even though we are multidimensional. We're always pulling in multidimensional information. That's more so what the Emerald Tablet codes are like, is multidimensional light consciousness that has the ability to transform us ultimately, you know, into, you know, our highest form here on Earth. So it isn't like a book, or it isn't like a scroll, What Thoth had shown me is that these Emerald Tablets contained these codes, but they were accessed by us through our DNA. So I was shown in Atlantis, also in Lemuria, and later in Egypt, that there were very special ceremonies where these codes were received by specific individuals into our DNA.
When you touch your arms like that, do you see the codes on people's arms, or you're just saying,
every time you've said that, even before the show, when you said like coded in my DNA, you've kind of stroked your arms.
Yes, in many of these experiences, when I was first guided to go into the Akashic Record to remember, you know, about the Emerald Tablets and my connection there, I was dimensionally transported, I guess you could say, into one of these ceremonies existing in the now, Most people would say it was a past life, but that's not the way that I experience it. And then I experience the encodement. So it's many times it's the etheric temple of the Emerald Tablets, which exists in a higher dimensional space above the Great Pyramid in Egypt. It's actually, you know, an etheric copy, but made of pure crystalline material, much like what the Emerald Tablets are made of. And the particular ceremony is to encode the Emerald Tablet information into your DNA, into your cellular structure. And that's carried on, not just from that experience, but from life to life. So what my belief is that many of us walking the face of the planet today have active Emerald Tablet encodements that we can activate with our intention. And that can contain information, like information on new healing practices, maybe new water purification, or, you know, infinite energy, or those type of things. But more important, it's ascension codes, you know, for our own transformation of ourselves. You know, the alchemy, you know, of, you know, manifesting our highest self now. So that was my experience, was first having the experience of these ceremonies or rituals where these encodements were being actively received. And yes, it was like the skin was lighting up. The very walls of the temple itself were information, light, sacred geometry, and sound flowing into our light bodies, flowing in from the very top of the pyramid as well, all the way from the great central sun. So through these ceremonies, you know, Thoth said we can access these spaces now to receive the intentional codes, you know, to activate all of this knowledge, to activate this accelerated development in our timing right now. We can merge with these experiences and have this access. It doesn't exist in the past, you know, it exists right now. So that's why he said it was so important to remember it first, so that then I could help other people to learn how to intentionally connect with these codes themselves.
So I'm getting hot again.
is there a modality for putting either yourself in the space or another person that you're assisting into the space of being able better to receive?
Is this what your website talks about? You do attunements? Is that what happens in an attunement?
I do. Well, you know, I don't do anything small. So one of the big things that I love to do is create massive crystal grids. I was talking about those Lemurian crystals earlier in the show, and they're not inexpensive. They actually are rather expensive. And at the time when I first became fascinated with them, you know, we were financially struggling. But rather than pay car payments and so forth, I did go crystal crazy, and I bought many, many crystals, and I couldn't understand why I needed all of these. And later to come find out that I was channeling these sacred geometry, crystalline grids that I would build, these ceremonial grids of crystals and flowers and colors and images. But they anchor in the energies of these spaces. So I can go into an intentional connection with Thoth, and I can ask to be linked into this etheric temple of the Emerald Tablets that exists above the Great Pyramids, or any of the other Emerald Tablet spaces. You know, there's the ones existing in Atlantis that we can dimensionally connect to, because time doesn't really exist. And then I can use these grids to anchor that space in, so it's easier for other people to access. Although you don't need all that fancy stuff, really. You can use, you know, simple meditation and intention techniques. You can use alignments with aligning, you know, with the central sun, and then your intention to really open up and to receive the highest activation codes that you can access at that time to help you hold the highest frequency of light that you're able to hold. It's extremely powerful. I've been playing around with some of the techniques that he's been giving me, and it's been actually very successful. I did a version of it, Eric, when you were with me, a mini version, and that was kind of a watered down version of an Emerald Tablet encodement. And I've done many of them with groups of people that have had no no knowledge or no access. And some people that are new meditators, you know, and people that are new to crystals. But I always have, like, you know, boxes of crystals that people can hold, because the quartz also amplifies intention and can also amplify our intention to connect with these morphogenic field, or the, you know, universal field that holds, you know, the emerald tablet codes. So, you know, it's intention plus, you know, we can use tools and crystals either in grids or holding them to help us have easier access to it. But that's the way that I do it. But what my intention is to, you know, provide just very simple techniques.
Well, and a lot of people, it's almost like there's some religions, like religious science, it has many paths up the mountain. Mm-hmm. Same thing with accessing this information. Some people might get it through frequency. So you seem to be more facilitated with crystals. Mm-hmm. Some people use plant medicines. They mm-hmm. go on an ayahuasca journey or something else. There's something that opens them up a little bit for the purpose of reaching deeper into, you know, this Akashic field, the realm of the crystal, the emerald tablets, this information that does seem to be coming through. Seems like it's been there a long time. We talked about sacred geometry being all over the world. Number sequences, stories, even if it's just a story, something like the hero's journey that Joseph Campbell noticed. There's something thematically that has been with us since we started writing things down or doing math. And some of it, a lot of it, points to a spiritual dimension of who we are. And we're kind of coming back now and incorporating the science behind it, the metaphysics with the physics, the math, and a lot of times they end up being relational, mm-hmm. that they talk to each other rather than mock each other. They're actually communicating with each other. And that is what makes it such an exciting time, is this stuff that did used to sound so out there is kind of dovetailing in ways to the cogs of academia that we know. The way science wheels turn seems very strict and rigid, and all of a sudden these things that seem like total out there kind of thinking mm-hmm. actually gears in very nicely with all this stuff.
And yeah, that's, and, you know,
fascinating.
I love that you bring up the science of it too, because you know there's been much scientific research about, you know, the turning on and off of genes through sound and light frequencies, and that's really what we're doing. You know, we're anchoring light and sound and sacred geometry with our intention. Crystals and, you know, connecting with the central sun or different meditation techniques bring in different light frequencies, bring in different sound, even though you can't hear it sometimes on the physical level. And it has the ability to alter and turn on and off genes and repair genes.
Well, that's where dolphins communicate.
I was on your website, and it's so beautiful with the mermaids and the dolphins. And that was going to be my question. Eric to Eric, look at that. He's totally tapped
without
in.
Without even seeing it. Well,
he didn't even see it on my computer.
Sound.
I wanted to bring it back to how they all relate with
yeah, and
sound, frequency, the water.
Let's go to Tesla. Tesla said two things. I mean, he listed three things. If you want us to understand the mysteries of the universe, think of energy. That seems obvious, but think of frequency and vibration. So how important frequency and vibration is, and sound, what we call sound, our ears hear a very limited spectrum of what sound can be. We can't hear subsonic, very low vibration cycles per second. We can't hear ultrasonic, and that is a huge band. Dolphins can hear, we stop hearing at about 15,000 cycles per second. Dolphins can hear up to 80,000 cycles per second. And that's 60,000 to 80,000 cycles is what ultrasound is, the device used to look into a womb and reveal a holographic picture of a baby. That's what sound can do, is it can create an image. You can target it. It can cavitate tissue and destroy tumors and things. That's probably where we're going. I'm going to play another song here. Now I got to pull it up. I thought we were going to be talking about Thoth in relation to Egypt a lot, so I wanted to bring an Egyptian song a little bit into it. This is an acoustic cover of Walk Like an Egyptian.
I own paintings on the tombs that do the sand dance, don't you know? If you move too quick, go away, all the building down like a domino. All the bizarre men by the now, they put the money on the bed. Crocodiles, oh, hey, oh, snap your teeth on a cigarette. Foreign toss with a hookah pop, say, oh, hey, oh, hey. like an Egyptian. Punk and the metal band. When the buzzer rings, oh, hey, oh, I'm walking like an Egyptian. All the kids in the marketplace say, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Walk like an Egyptian. Bend your back, you twist your arm, then you pull it back. Oh, life is hard, oh, hey, oh, strike a pose on the Cadillac. If you wanna find all the cops are hanging out in the donut shop. They sing and dance, oh, hey, oh, spin the clothes and they cruise the block. All the Japanese when they yell, the party boys go Kremlin. And the Chinese know, oh, hey, oh, they're walking like an Egyptian. And the cops in the donut shop say, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Walk like an Egyptian. Walk like an Egyptian.
Hello, this is Monique Hemingway, psychic, medium, channel, and healer. And it's been my pleasure to be with you here on Awakening Code Radio.
Thanks, Monique. Another great guest that she had, and she channels people. She had a spirit, an entity. I forget, Willow. Willow was the entity that she would channel, just kind of drop in, and here comes Willow, bringing lots of wisdom. I mean, you take the time to listen what they're saying. Like, I guess that makes sense. You know, that's been my challenge to hear how it comes through. But, you know, that's... I think that's everybody's challenge.
I'm glad we had the physical sensation, though, and that you experienced it.
Yeah,
and it wasn't just me that I brought it up, but he was saying...
Maybe I just had a sympathetic hot flash.
Oh,
that's okay, how but I'm in fine. Touch with my feminine side. Anyway, we're kind of finished. We're in our last 20 minutes talking about the Emerald Tablets. How was that, Shelley? Was that good? Did we go deep enough into the Emerald Tablet conversation? Because we did say that that's what the essence of the show was going to be. But, you know, you can't talk about that kind of stuff without branching out into everything else it touches and then bring it back in and back out and back in. I mean, that's the way all this information works. You don't want to be it can get very – that's what a religious experience can be, not the religious experience itself, the rapturous feeling you get either by song or – being in church or something. It's when it becomes the religion and has its own words and its catchphrases. It becomes its own thing that it tried to tell you it wasn't like. You know,
I call that the spinny dial in the eye syndrome.
Yeah. God's too big to put in a box, but we'll try anyway. You know, I mean, it's kind of that. And I just like that we can let it breathe and go out and come back in. And it is a big topic when we talk about the Emerald Tablets. Because it alludes to the same bed of information as the Akashic Records. It alludes to the same thing that physicist Nassim Harriman is talking about, is a field that space might just be all of space. The entire universe may be a field of information that as energy moves through it, picks up. This was the analogy that Nassim used right here in the studio. He said, listen, the entire planet hasn't been here long enough to create us. 4 billion years is not enough time to create something as complex as a human being, much less every other life form that exists on the planet with these camera eyes and our olfactory senses and taste and smell and all of our organs individually doing all these complex processes together that we can move without thinking about moving our hands and everything else. He goes, there has to be some information. And he used the analogy of a blind man and a Rubik's Cube. If you give a blind man a Rubik's Cube and don't give him any information, it will take him millions of years to solve it. But as soon as you give just a little bit of information, like that move got you a little closer, and that move got you a little further away, kind of like hot and cold, the old game we used to play, he will solve it in like 100 years, which is still a long time, but compared to millions of years, not. So he's saying the universal field is like that. As energy moves through it, it is getting little touches that saying you're getting closer to what you're supposed to be or along the right path. And sometimes we call that feeling in grace, or maybe even getting the chills, that you get some sort of affirmation that, yeah, you're on the path, you're where you're supposed to be, you're learning the information you're supposed to be learning. And that makes sense to me.
It, one of the things that I'm really fascinated by is you're giving us a lot of information that's coming through to you and what it is and explaining it. And what really, really trips my trigger and lights me up is what we're supposed to do with it. Like, now that we're getting all this information, isn't there an action item?
Yeah, well, this, you know, I'm so glad that you asked that question.
Good question.
Is, you know, we're living in very special times. You know, there's a lot of prophecy. You're talking about the indigenous prophecies that you're going to hear, you know, when you go to this wonderful event that you were talking about. And, you know, many of them speak that we're living in very special times, you know, like times like no other. And we do have the ability to transform and to manifest like we've never had before, or like we don't remember that we've ever had before. Almost instant manifestation of what we desire and, you know, our intent manifesting. That is godlike, you know, and that's very special. Mm-hmm. But it is really about deciding to intentionally participate, because so much of humanity right now isn't intentionally participating. They're passively participating. You know, that's where we get pain. That's where we struggle. That's where we get stuck. Whereas there are so many tools and energies that are available, you know, if we are intentfully and consciously and gently, you know, with love, participating and using what's available. And so that's really what I believe the gift is, mm-hmm. is that we do have these things and we can intentionally tap into, I can intentionally ask to receive what's divinely mine. You know, and that's what I was shown with the Emerald Tablets, is it's very easy to ask to receive it. You know, simple meditation, focusing, opening techniques. You have to be open to receive, right? And then it flows naturally because it's yours. And, you know, we can ask those that experience, you know, working with archangels and angels, angelic support, our guides, non-physical guides, you know, they can't really assist unless we ask. And it is our intention and our openness and our asking that allows the miracles. Same thing with our transformation. You know, we need to be open to receive it. Otherwise, you know, we're going to get drugged behind the pickup truck, you know, getting bloody and bruised and, you know, experiencing pain. We will over time be transformed nonetheless. But what we do with it is we intentionally connect in with it. And with the Emerald Tablets information and codes as well, is we all have special gifts. So it was my experience, you know, remembering these things through the Akashic journeys and with Thoth, that those that have actively encoded Emerald Tablets within their DNA also hold special wisdom or special gifts that they're able to access. But they need to intentionally want to access those. So we have to consciously connect and open to say, okay, what are these gifts? I'm open now to accessing this record that's in my DNA, and therefore it allows us to. So, you know, it can be a heightened awakening, you know, being able to hold more light, you know, being able then to bring that to your families. You know, maybe you're a nurse, maybe you work, you know, in the criminal justice system, and now you're able to hold more light, and so therefore you're helping all of these to transform. That's really, you know, what you're supposed to do with it. That's the action key. It's not just to connect with it and say, oh, great, so this exists. It's then to consciously tap in and say, okay, well, maybe I'm open to the concept that, yes, this is true, that I can actively, in a very simple meditation or in a very simple technique, access these Emerald Tablet codes, or ask to receive the highest light codes that are mine, divinely mine, experience them then transforming me, and then accessing possibly these gifts. Or for me, it's wisdom. So it's ascension techniques. I'm given, you know, things that I'm to share with other people that are extremely healing or helping them to transform themselves, you know, and become more of their authentic self. So that's the action statement, really.
Yeah, and it requires a deep level of consciousness, which we kind of say there's a lot of people, and anytime we talk about the message that we talk about on the show, we're not expecting the whole world to come online and everybody hold each other's hand and sing Kumbaya and we're all getting together. There seems to be, even in physics, enough, if you get enough, a critical mass is what it's called in physics, or the 100th monkey, something, the tipping point. You get enough, and it affects the whole. Cancer works that way in a negative way, a very small start, and it just keeps affecting others, and it tricks other cells into behaving a certain way. The call to consciousness is really required in the intentionality, because it's sort of a dual-edged sword. It's in the Bible, it would say, knock and I will listen. You, I'm not going to ignore you. God more or less saying, if you knock on the door, I'm gonna show up to you. Like you just said, if you ask your guides, they're going to show up. But the flip side of that is you better be prepared to do something with the information. That's the almost the double-edged sword of it, is I want to know. So let's just call it more in the biblical sense. I knock, Jesus, God, whoever you want to call it, I want to know what you have to say about this. Well, what you're really asking is, I want to know what I should be doing after this. It's going to be an action plan, like what Michelle was alluding to. You're not just going to get some words, you're going to get an action plan. So much of Jesus' ministry, the majority of it in the Bible, if you take the time to read the Gospels, it's 90% action plan. Go out and be like this. It's not just bow before me and I'm your Savior. It was be like this. Be kind, be compassionate, be forgiving, turn the other cheek. It was so loaded with action plan. And I think that's what people need to be prepared for if they're going to step more confidently in their spiritual journey. The next step, and step by step by step, is be prepared that you're going to get an action plan handed to you. And then, almost before you knock, think about that. Am I ready for the Grand Commission? Because sometimes they're going to be tragically simple truths. It is going to be open yourself up to love, be a loving, kind human being all the time. It's not going to temper it and say, be loving and kind human being to some people. It's going to challenge you and say, go out and be a loving, kind human being. If you're not almost ready to hear that message, because then you'll just go, well, they don't deserve it. That person doesn't deserve my compassion and kindness and forgiveness. You're really not ready to hear the universal Akashic version of this deep wisdom. At least that's the way I see it. If you're going to knock, ask, go do the ceremony, be opened up and receive these messages, know that what Michelle was alluding to, action plan is what's going to follow. Yes. Or an invitation to an action plan.
Yeah, not only, just being the love, but then also illuminating where in you are not love.
Sure.
Not loving with yourself.
Sure. Yeah. Exposure. I mean, it's be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it, is kind of really what it boils down to. Is that's why you do a lot of spiritual work first. It doesn't all just come at one time. We celebrate the baby steps here on this show. A lot of our listeners, we had a listener from Belgium say, it's a quote that I've used many times on the show, is celebrate the many small epiphanies rather than the one big one on your deathbed. Mm-hmm. It's much better to have many small ones and recognize them and go, wow, I just saw something that's truly meaningful, but it's enough, it's packet size where I can digest it and do something. I can act on this one. Those are things to celebrate, the many small epiphanies, rather than you're 100 years old dying on your bed and go, what the heck was I doing? Chasing the money and the job and the all that stuff. It's so celebrate those. Be aware that that's the way real change is going to happen within you, is on the path. It's one foot ahead of the other. You don't just leapfrog, cheat the system, and bound over. There are stories of a few people like you're going to Santa Fe, St. Francis of Assisi. Mm-hmm. He kind of leapfrogged a little bit. There's Buddha kind of leapfrogged a little bit. Some of these teachings is they went from this and very quickly went to that. But for most of us, it is a one foot in front of the other journey. And that's the way it makes sense, because then we can digest it. But I do invite people, you, listener, to recognize those steps. When that little epiphany comes, don't just blow it off. Say, this is something, you're building your tool belt. You are putting tools in your tool belt when things get challenging, when the person comes and challenges your ability to love, that you said, no, I remember somebody said something about loving when people act like this. You know, you're developing a lot. How about that? What do you think of that, Michelle?
I like that.
Okay, thank you.
I like that. Well, one of the things that I like to highlight during this whole process, we're talking about, you know, miracle manifestations or instant manifestations and the God goddess all that is connection. And it almost sounds so smooth and easy. And I think it's really important to talk about transformation. Sometimes is like labor. And yeah, you get the baby on the other side. Woohoo! You get this beautiful child that you connect with. But it hurts sometimes. And there is sometimes you do have to reach that, what did you call it? Your breaking point. Your when you bust it open or
yeah. Well, I call it psychotic break.
Psychotic break. And
that's what it looks like. But
I feel that many people are going through that process right now, and I am not excluding myself mm-hmm. when I say that, because we're all a part of this. And you know, even today I went to visit a friend and she said she was visiting her friend who just attempted suicide. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be like in the field right now, that people are talking about it. Healers are addressing it, because I think a lot of people are feeling overwhelmed with the speed up of time, mm-hmm. you know, and stepping out of time. And how do you get off the wheel? And, you know, the elections are coming and we see the divisions. So this transformation process, what I'd like to do in the last, you know, 10 minutes of our show is talk a little bit about how we could utilize the Akashic records or these tools that I always call them Toth, and I think you call them Toth, but same being, you know, what is it that this record keeper is bringing back into our conscious awareness that we can utilize for our own transformation and for the transformation of our planet, where, you know, the baby steps you're talking about, Eric. Because Eric, you look like it's always smooth sailing for Eric Rankin. He's just the Jimmy Buffett guy, you know, in Margaritaville. But we all have our stuff.
Sure, of course.
Well, they said, you know, there's many of the astrologers that I've read recently say that we're in the great cleanse, you know, and there's been a lot of acceleration and a lot of things going on, you know, energy-wise, you know, with the eclipses and all of the retrograde planets and so forth. And, you know, whether or not you connect with that or not, we're all feeling it.
Yeah.
And, you know, even the healers, you know, we've been going through dark nights of the soul and, you know, being able to try to connect with that part that isn't light, that part that is not working anymore. And there's been many major, major endings and beginnings. Lots of flare-ups of people with addiction. Lots of flare-ups of people, you know, with financial crisis, ending, you know, careers or relationships that aren't working for them. And, you know, I hear so much because in the healing work that I do, you know, when is this going to end? You know, I thought this was over,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
you get to the next lily pad and then think, continues oh, God, to get more, there's another one?
More and more and more intense. And, you know, that is the truth, you know. It is the great cleanse, but it's also the great awakening. So what is being pushed to the surface is that which is keeping us from being conscious and keeping us from being loving and keeping us from being those things. So the, you know, Toth, he's sharing with us that there, you know, that we can accelerate our transformation, and that it doesn't have to be as laborious. Yes, we're still going to have to move through those pieces, which are darkness, but they can move through with greater ease. They can be released in a way that's not as painful.
Traumatic.
Yeah, we're still going to have the experience. You're still going to have to learn the lesson. We're not saved from that. Consciousness doesn't want you, you know, that's not the way consciousness works. When we become conscious, you become aware of all of yourself. We don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So, you know, what when we have these divinity codes, it's accelerating the light, but the light is going to push the darkness out. It is going to do that, so it doesn't save us from that. However, it does help us to have more light on those places within us, so it's not as painful. And so, you know, if one can use some of these tools or take an action plan to connect with the energies that are available in this way, then they don't have to experience, you know, suicidal thoughts or then getting stuck in another cycle of, you know, the flare up of, you know, an addiction or, you know, this type of thing or, you know, painful relationship patterns. So, yeah.
Well, we had Marianne Williamson on the show about a month ago, and in her way, she said the exact same thing. So once again, you know, you get someone that's kind of coming from almost a clinical Western approach to saying it to thought from 5,000-year-old ago, emerald tablets. It really is the same message that we're of this ascension message. You don't have to stay stuck in these places. You are being called to be the joy-filled, bliss-filled, purposeful, healthy, happy human being that you were designed to be. Once again, two different paths merging at the same message. So we are at the end of the show.
We're at the end of the show, and I just happened to look down at my computer. I see a message right here on Awakening Code Radio page from listener Denise Hansen. She says, I tuned in late, but love the show. First time listening, won't be my last. Definitely awesome. Going to listen to the podcast to hear what I missed.
Thanks,
Denise.
Show.
Thank you,
appreciate
Denise.
All of our new listeners, and everybody's been with us. We're getting ready to celebrate our 4-year anniversary show coming up in October sometime. It's probably the second week of October. Just crazy that we have been around that long. It just blows my mind. Thanks very much, Deborah. You've been an awesome guest.
Great.
It was so fun.
We were so lit up on the each break. I know that's when it's a great show.
We just tripped around the universe.
Yes. We brought it all back to Laguna Beach here. Well, here we go. We're going to take it out with Sean Paul.
November 5th. My birthday.
Yes.
November 5th. We'll see Three Dog Night at Coach House.
And just down the street. Awesome. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX 93.5.